Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, our programs, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is David Haig. David, a warm welcome and hi to my to our radio program.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the next half an hour.
David is lectures in policy analysis at the University of Auckland and is a consultant in social policy and social research. He also lectures in social practice at Unitec, and he has carried out several projects like social impact assessment, evaluating programs, preparing strategic plans for NGOs, and assisting in setting up Main Street programs. David gave a talk at our Mercy Spirituality Center in April this year, and his talk was called Civil Society. David, what is civil society?
Well, the simplest answer to that is to explain what it is not. It is not government, and it is not the private sector. So it's everything else in society other than those two. So it includes not-for-profit organizations or NGOs, charities, churches, trade unions, mutual organizations, cooperative organizations, all those families, probably iwi, but certainly Maori organizations are included in civil society.
So you mentioned a sector. What other sectors are there?
Well, there's the government sector, which of course is a very complicated sector. It not only includes the cabinet and prime minister's office and those decision makers, but it also includes all the government departments, it includes local authorities, it includes the other semi-government organizations, state-owned enterprises, organizations like accident compensation.
So the state would be the first sector?
First sector, state, second sector, then would be the private sector. Mm-hmm. The private sector, of course, is very large and includes the big, big organizations like Fletcher's, that might be the biggest, or Telecom, but it also includes a family business, perhaps, or a person just running their own little consultancy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have the first, the second, and the third sector. The third sector is the civil society.
Civil society.
And you mentioned a bit social movements.
Ah, yeah, well, you know, if you look at social movements, then you're into a fascinating area because it's through social movements that social change occurs. And I can give you some sort of historic examples, like the end of slavery, for example. The transport of slaves was really stopped through the work of women in England.
Through women in England?
They were the ones that got themselves organized. So we often read that it was William Wilberforce, who was the Member of Parliament that introduced the bill that was passed eventually, but it was the pressure came on from the people, and that was mainly the women.
How did they do that?
Well, they had all sorts of interesting techniques. For example, they refused to have sugar in their tea because sugar came from the plantations in America and the Caribbean,
yeah,
where the slaves worked. So all of a sudden...
So the demand dropped.
They stopped the demand, they also had little cells, little groups that were writing letters constantly and educating people. And they had buttons. They had buttons made, and they had pamphlets, and they had big posters. And it was through that work, mainly the sort of middle-class women, that got themselves organized.
That's amazing.
Quite a force, eh?
It reminds me of a bishop from Latin America who once told me that he was asked by somebody in Europe, well, how can you as one bishop or the people there, how can they do a change? And he said, well, even if we are all little ants and we are fighting against an animal, we can disturb him.
That's true. And if you look at in a more modern context, then it was really the people organizing themselves with the anti-apartheid movement, the anti-Springbok tour of 1981. That was quite a profound change in New Zealand. And it's the NGO sector that really pushed government to put controls on smoking. Mm-hmm. So organizations like ASH, A-S-H, they were the ones that really started to put the pressure on. And the Cancer Society was another one. But it was those were social movements, the women's movement, of course, the massive one, 1960s America, by the late 60s and 70s, same in New Zealand.
But all these movements, they start with an information or with creating awareness, because if people are not aware of the background of a problem, then how can they change anything?
Well, and I think the women in America, particularly California, they learnt from the civil rights movement. So Martin Luther King demanding rights for black Americans that had a profound human rights impact right across America. And the women picked it up for themselves. They realized that they were slaves as well. Mm-hmm. You know, women could not, for example, get a mortgage without a man signing the document and acting as guarantor, father, someone else, but it had to be a man.
That was in the 20th century.
Oh, yeah. That's not long ago. 1970s, it's not long ago.
People don't realize it. They take it for granted what has been achieved.
They do, but it was a social movement. It wasn't government acting on its own. It was through pressure. Yeah. And women getting the vote, same thing. Pressure from women.
1893, New Zealand was the first country where the women were allowed to vote, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And that all came out of the temperance movement. So women were, you know, because men in New Zealand were such heavy drinkers, the women were the ones that got themselves organized and started educating themselves about their position in society. And then the temperance movement sort of morphed into pressure for the vote.
So you mentioned the middle class women. It was not the rich women who had everything, and it was not the poor women who struggled to survive, but it was in between where they saw both sides. Is that the reason for it?
Well, that certainly was the history, as far as I'm aware. I think that's different with, say, the Maori social movement, land movements, and Dame Fina Cooper with the march, the Hikoi from Northland to Wellington. That was Maori people generally. That was more of an ethnic group, but supported by perhaps liberal Pākehā as well. Yeah, first time that anyone was able to walk over the Auckland Harbour Bridge.
Was it?
Yeah. And I spoke to people that walked across that, and they said it was shaking because there were thousands of people on the bridge.
That must have been amazing.
It must have been fantastic.
Yeah.
But that changed things, you see.
Yeah.
That was that hikoi, that was the beginning of another social movement. So those things, you know, civil society is partly about social movements. It's also about delivering services. And you can see that how important that the social service sector is through charities,
mm-hmm.
food banks. We're reading that in the paper today. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a bigger than ever demand. The government is allowing this growing gap between rich and poor. That's totally unjust. That should be the case, that the rich are not paying their taxes. They're able, through smart accountants, to get around it.
Mm. And like we heard the other day when I interviewed Chris Dale, the poor, they pay the higher interest.
Of course they do. They pay high interest and they pay higher taxes.
Mm. And if it's higher, well, it's in relationship to what they earn.
Yep.
But if you have just enough to survive, and it's quite a difference if you have $2 or $3 more or not.
Mm. That's right. So just the odd few dollars make all the difference as to what you can buy, what you can feed. And then, of course, if you lose your job and then you've got a stand-down period, God, then you're reliant on charities or family or someone else to help you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For those of you who are listening, who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. The program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 a.m. on Planet FM 104.6. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is David Hague. David has explained what civil society means and why civil society is so important, and it all starts with social movement. So we should not think that one of us is without any power. If we get together with others, we can achieve something.
Oh, I think that's so important. And of course, what we're starting to recognize now, we've always understood the importance of people working together and how we are social animals. We enjoy working with others. Most people do. But the neurologists now are starting to come through with some new information about oxytocin.
What's that?
Oh, well, it's a chemical that's released in your brain. And if you talk to mothers about it, they've learnt about it through childbirth and through breastfeeding, that there's the bond created between the child and the mother, for example, through breastfeeding. What the neurologists are discovering is there's a lot of oxytocin release when we work together as people and we bond, and these chemicals are released in our brain. It's a feel-good thing. So, you know, the science now is catching up with what community workers have always understood, the importance of what they call social capital.
Well, the sociologists, they might have known about it, but they couldn't prove it.
Well, they partly proved it. I mean, one of the first pieces of research was by a man called Putnam, and he was asked to try to explain why southern Italy was not economically successful compared to northern Italy, which is.
Mm-hmm.
And he examined every possible thing he could examine, and in the end, he said, it's social capital. It's people in the north who have a history of working together. Whereas in the South, the mafia and a really old-fashioned medieval church tells people what they should do. In the North, the guild system, the universities, the cooperative movements are still there today, still strong in northern Italy. And that meant that trust that's built up through social capital helps to create a better economy and a better society.
Does it have to do also with education?
Yeah, yeah. Education is, I think, quite fundamental to it all. And the first universities in the world were in northern Italy.
The first Bologna.
And perhaps I should mention something about the guilds, because probably the origins of a lot of the NGO sector is through the guilds. And the guilds were groups of workers that set up organizations, like the Stonemasons Guild or the Carpenters.
They were very strong in Germany.
Very, very strong right throughout Europe. And the word guild is quite interesting, because if you belong to a guild, you put money into the guild, and then if you are injured or sick, then you would get welfare payments from the guild.
In German, the word for money is Geld.
Exactly, you see. So we talk about to guild something.
Yes.
To put gold on it. So it was the gold that they collected.
Like an insurance for
them. It was definitely an insurance system. So that was the sort of origins. Now, it was destroyed through two or three things that happened. One of them was the French Revolution. And the outcome of the French Revolution was you don't need guilds, you don't need community associations. The state will run everything. So all these, including the church organizations, were destroyed at that time. And that sent shockwaves through other countries, probably Germany, but certainly in England. They didn't want anything like that at all, and resisted any sort of revolutionary tendencies. And, of course, they were able later on then to export any troublemakers to Australia.
You also mentioned in your talk that the guilds were destroyed also by laissez-faire capitalism.
Yes, sorry, I didn't mention that. That was the second thing, that through capitalism, through the industrialization of society and urbanization, now you could start mass production of goods. You didn't need the craftsmen, the craftswomen to the same extent.
They were too expensive.
Yeah, it was too expensive. So you could cut costs. I think one of the examples Adam Smith gave was, imagine how long it took to make a pin, whereas through mass production you could produce thousands of pins within a short length of time.
Yes, I've seen one of these machines. It's amazing. It's like rain.
That's right. So then you had this massive industrial revolution and urbanization that occurred at the same time. So people were leaving the land, leaving those crafts, and living in poverty conditions. And the charities now started to pick up those sort of issues.
That's exactly the time when many congregations were founded.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Because they saw the need that was occurring during industrialization.
Oh, yes. Salvation Army is a good example of that. Yes, the Salvation Army saw the poverty around them and got themselves organized in an army structure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And have been doing you know, good works, caring for people, poor people, and soldiers who are fighting, and they're, yeah.
It's also the time that Catherine McCauley lived, the founder of the Mercy Sisters, and she established the congregation in 1831. And because she saw the need of the people, she saw how they were treated, and she wanted to go where she was needed, and she opened a house and asked people to come if they needed help. She didn't go and told them to come or to give her help somewhere where nobody asked. She always waited for an invitation, but she opened the doors.
That's a good example. So you had sort of two phases of industrialization. You had that early phase where power, energy was created from coal, and steel was produced, and big infrastructure like railways. And then you had the second phase, and particularly around electricity, the motor car.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So the Industrial Revolution really moved into America in a big way.
So why is it important today? Now we've heard all the history. Can you give us...
Well, I think we're going through a massive change. We're going through another Industrial Revolution right now. And it's a revolution around communications and high technology, those mm-hmm. two. And we don't even begin to understand what the end result will be, just like the first and the second industrial revolutions. We didn't know.
We don't know who the victims will be and how to help.
That's right.
But I think that it's important to stay awake and to be alert.
And be vigilant.
Yes.
That's right. So one of the other important roles for civil society is actually in analyzing what's going on as best as you can, and then making representations to whoever, particularly government agencies, to deal with proper social policy. And so you see it today with the child poverty action groups, the Auckland Action on Poverty, and so on. Once again, civil society has got itself organized around a very key topic, particularly child poverty. Yeah.
So we need information. We need to be open for information.
Yeah.
What can you say to somebody who says, well, I'd like to get information, but what source can I trust?
Yeah, well, I think you can trust quite a number of organizations that do this sort of analysis, and you can go online. The Christian social services organizations that come together do analysis of policy. The Salvation Army have an excellent group that does policy analysis as well, and a number of others.
So these organizations, they have already looked at the information, they have already done the analysis, and that's where you can start getting involved.
You can start involved there.
And then you do it the way that it's most, it's better for you. Because some people are likely to go on the streets, others like to write an article, and others just like to talk to their friends about it and create awareness. Right.
And you're free to do all those. If you want to get involved in a voluntary organization, then in Auckland you would go to Volunteering Auckland. And that's a fantastic organization, and they will work out what your interests are and place you with an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So different ways of being involved.
Mm-hmm. And that's all. It makes civil society, and that's our advantage in a democracy, that we can be active, that we are allowed to move the way that we think is best.
That's a really important point, that I think the health of any society depends on active democracy.
So the least you can do is go and vote when there's an election.
Yeah, that's the minimum in a democracy is voting. The other part is being an active citizen and getting involved and being part of society, playing your part in the whole thing. Trust is built up, and there's nothing more important than a trusting society. Imagine a society with no trust. There are plenty of those around the world.
Yes, and we're lucky that we're not living in one of these.
That's right.
And I think it's a really important point. And if you get involved in your community in many different ways, I know some volunteers who volunteer in the parish who help people struggling with figures or struggling with writing a CV or something like that. There are so many ways that you can help others. And if you strengthen others, that's also part of civil society.
That's right. It can operate on an individual level or in a larger group. Yeah,
that's amazing. And thank you very much, David, for this interview. Thank you for all the information that you gave to us and the historic background. I really think that we all have to be aware of it. We have to be aware of where it comes from, what has been achieved by social movements and civil society. So this means that we can also, we don't have to give up if we see a problem in society. We can get others help us and get moving and be active citizens. Thank you very much, David. And I'd just like to draw your attention to one of our events in from the Mercy Spirituality Center. Next year, we'll have Edwina Gately coming, and she's going to give a retreat. Edwina is from the United States, and she will share stories and poetry on mothers, sisters, daughters standing on their shoulders. And if you book in before New Year, we will have a special early bird fee for you. If you need some time of discernment to find out what you can do, you might consider spending some time at our Mercy Spirituality Center. We offer retreats, Christian meditation, spiritual companioning, but we also have a very interesting program that you can access through our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And for any feedback on my interviews, please contact me at muffintalk840@gmail.com. I wish you all a very good Friday and a good rest of the Advent season, blessed Advent season. And I hope to let you tune in again next week. Thank you very much, and thank you, David.